Today, the 1 year school podcast is introducing you to my son Keanu in episode number 2. He's giving his unique perspective of what school was like for him and how a lot of the trauma that I remember, especially from primary school, when he was diagnosed with dyslexia, he has actually forgotten or suppressed. He's also talking about the faults that he sees in our education system and a lot more. You are listening to the 1 year school podcast. Are you ready to activate your focus, to sharpen your memory, and to release anxiety and stress often caused by school? We are introducing experts and coaches who will enrich your life to become happy and healthy in body and mind. We also interview our students who not only have overcome dyslexia and other learning challenges, but they are thriving and leading the lives they desire and have been able to create. I'm your host, Barbara Hoy, and in today's episode, number 2, I'm very excited to be chatting to my son Keanu, the reason why I have even entered the world of dyslexia, and the reason behind the 1 year school project. We are finding out his quirky way of looking at life and his experiences at school. He will be explaining why he doesn't want to have his HSC results or his extension English work, which was published by the Board of Studies, mentioned at all. And you will probably agree with him on that. Well, I am a proud mother, what can I say? And like most mothers, I'm equally proud of all my 4 children, who I believe are amazingly accomplished, confident, and self-motivated young people. That is what I want every other mother to feel like. And I know that sometimes we need a little help to get there. Sometimes our children need us to help them, but other times they need us to back off and trust that they can do it themselves. Well, knowing the balance is a wisdom that we're all trying to achieve. The 1 year school has a very special guest today, my son Marcus Hoy. Now, welcome, Marcus. You are the reason why this podcast even exists and why I am on this path and Sydney Dyslexia exists. So can you tell us a little bit about your earliest experiences, how you, when you were in primary school, that's when my journey started, when you were in year 1 or year 2, did that ever affect you, or do you remember even anything from these early days when you started at school and you were struggling, or you were in the banana group and you're struggling with literacy? How was that experience for you?
I don't recall most of... I don't recall most of my primary school experience in terms of, like, academic achievements. And in terms of just, like, being behind, and the whole dyslexia aspect of it is actually a bit vague in my mind, because I think most children at that age, a lot at least, aren't really that focused on comparing themselves to other students and making sure that they're, like, you know, high achieving, or that they can I think they just want to have fun and be kids. But I do remember aspects of it. I remember the whole banana group thing. I think it was made clear to me that I was underachieving in literary skills.
Was that from the point of teachers or by other parents, children, or by your mother?
I'm not sure, to be honest. It would be because I started a dyslexia program, and I think I would have just been told it. I don't know by who. I don't think teachers, to be honest, generally made me feel like I was lagging behind, but maybe they did and I just don't remember it. Mm-hmm. It's a long time ago, you know, this was 20 years ago, and then...
Not quite, but...
What, 20 years ago when I started?
No.
Yeah?
16 years ago, I think you were.
I was 5 years old when I started.
No.
Started in primary school.
Yeah, but you started when you were in year 2, not in kindergarten. Yeah.
Well, I was 8 years old.
Well, that correction program happened when you were in year 2. But we probably noticed things being different before.
Yeah, I was 8 years old when I started.
Do you remember that program? Has it made a difference? Because you once said that it made a difference for you to focus with the breath and a few tools you used.
Yeah, so I think the focusing tools, which were around breath, around hands on shoulders and alignment, I think they were actually quite useful. And those tools helped be able to just focus in class. I think I was very distractible probably and struggled with focus. And I think I was kind of distracted because it wasn't really working for me. And I didn't get the sense of, or, you know, the joy of learning things very much. And not until at least high school. So,
did you notice at high school that anything was different, or that you found it, that you were still struggling at high school? Or
well, high school, I think, was more obvious, because in primary school, your students' performance and most of the kids just didn't care, I think, by and large, and they weren't that focused on academic outcomes and comparing each other. And then as soon as I entered high school, it was a very different environment, and people were very focused on comparing each other. I mean, I do remember year 7, started doing Shakespeare, and then in my class, different students were assigned different characters every class, and so you would kind of hope that you weren't assigned a character, and then you'd be assigned one, and then you wouldn't be actually learning, you'd just be shooting through the next scene, seeing where your lines would come up, hopefully you don't have a main character, and you just learn those, six lines that you got.
Was it like learning another language in a way, wasn't it, that different way?
There's an old English aspect to it, which makes it tough, but there's also just, performing reading in front of a class, who would actually mock you for mispronouncing something, so they, you know, people would laugh and whatnot, so you're like, okay, I don't want to be laughed at, so yeah. I'm going to move ahead and see what my lines are and be like, okay, Horatio, okay, next line, and then you're like, okay, repeating in your head, you're not listening to what anyone else is saying, you're not following the story, you're not listening to the teacher, you're just trying to make sure you don't get mocked, next line you say, and then your line comes,
not getting laughed at really,
and you say your line and you move on, and you're like, and at the time you don't think about how your time is being spent. I look back at it now and I think, my god, that is so much time wasted in English just worrying about mispronouncing a word and getting my line. That could have been, keep in mind, my line could have been 5 minutes away, 10 minutes away, and I'd still just be sitting there waiting for it.
Yeah.
And then double checking.
I remember literacy for you started with the Harry Potter series, where you started first reading reading a page, and I was reading 2 pages, and then we got into that you read more and more, and at the end read all 7 books several times. I think that was kind of your kickstart into literacy. Did you really enjoy reading after that?
Well, I think definitely I was very into Harry Potter, and that helped a lot, but I didn't read other books other than Harry Potter for quite a while, not until halfway, but beyond halfway, I don't recall, but it wasn't until later in high school that I started reading other books other than Harry Potter. There were probably other books I shortly read, but there were none I was dedicated to, but other than Harry Potter. And then gradually I picked up other fantasy books, and so fantasy was a big part of my reading for quite a while, from until probably 14 or something.
It's the part of your creativity or your creative brain. Right. Because you just told me that you're actually writing a story at the moment about a fantasy world, and in your professional capacity. Can you tell me a bit more about that?
Fantasy is obviously deeply wired into my brain at this point. I've read a lot of different fantasy. I now read things other than fantasy, but it's clearly a genre I like a lot. At this point, I'm writing a fantasy / sci-fi / climate fiction. Partly because I've always wanted to, and I'd written fantasy material before that didn't just for the sake of writing, and this time I'd like to actually turn it into a TV show. So the starting point is just developing a really good Bible for it that looks really good and makes a really clear concept, and then get some money to actually develop it properly with someone who's a professional screenplay writer.
Very exciting. I'm looking forward. And you want to make it animated, an animation?
Not yeah, an animation, because I also love animation. So yes, there's that. Yes, and yes. Also the people I work with like animation, yeah, and I think yeah, it's a good... Yeah. And it's Australian.
Yeah. And I remember when I was... I'm telling people that you did so well at your HSC with English. I mean, around literacy, mainly extension English. And you actually hate it when I talk about that. Marcus wrote a story for the HSC that was published, and we are very proud of it. But what's your opinion about the education system at the HSC? Because you were not very keen on the current system. Why is that?
Well, as I went through high school to like tie it in with the beginning I was doing quite poorly. But I got lucky because I was in the drama stream of the high school I was in. And for some reason, the school kind of structured it so that the drama kids, regardless of how well they were performing, were together no matter what for like the first 3 years or maybe even 4 years, maybe longer to be honest, maybe the first 5 or 6 years, I don't know. 6 years would be all the years. So mm-hmm. No, it would have been the first 3 to 4 years, we were all together regardless of how well we're performing. So, and it happened to be that my class were very high performing, you know, literacy. English students. And so I was able to just constantly be around and have friends who were high performing in terms of, you know, marks. And it reached a point where I improved, but I also was, I think, what I started discovering is like formulas for doing better. And maybe aspects of those formulas were valuable, but a lot of it was just formulas for, you know, including certain kinds of words and structuring it in certain ways, and often creating honestly meaningless essays that were just
like
gibberish.
The juxtaposition of play, wasn't it?
Yeah, well, that's different, but that's another good example of like where, you know, I was not actually being marked very well at the time, but that play was literally written, like, everyone else had done their major works months in advance or had largely finished it months in advance. I hadn't even started because I didn't know what I wanted to do it on. And then the funny thing is it just got closer and closer to the point where I had to hand it in, and I just was like, oh, okay, I'm just going to synthesize some of these subjects that we've been studying, like absurdism, postmodernism, nihilism, whatever, synthesize it into a play that's like extremely reflective of those of that research, but not necessarily a good play or anything I care about or find interesting or well written. It's just simply sentence by sentence, just pretty much regurgitating the concepts and ideas that I looked up, really a lot of it to be honest, Wikipedia and stuff like that. I mean, there were other sources, but you don't actually, in terms of the concepts of how deep they go in terms of talking about nihilism, postmodernism, and stuff like that, you don't have to go that much deeper than Wikipedia, because then you just repackage them into a play. And then because it is ticking so many boxes for markers, it did really well. And then got into the Young Writers Showcase, whatever. And I was like, that's craziness, because there was no heart in that project compared to some of my students who put a lot more heart into their projects. I think in general...
And you said that at afters, where you went afterwards, you almost had to relearn how to...
I went to UTS afterwards, then I went to afters.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
And at UTS, more so than afters. Afters is different. It has its own academic kind of standard or, like, attitude that's different to the major universities. UTS I went to first, and UTS... It was very different. I never really did pursue... Well, no. It was very different. It was just a different expectation. There was... I mean, at the end of the day, they just didn't have much time for waffle, and they just want you to address what was
in front of you. Get to the point.
Getting to the point, which was not how I'd been, you know, taught, really. and in high school and in HSC, you really just rope learn things. You just like repeat. You spend a lot of the year memorizing essays and stuff like that. And I wouldn't say all my subjects. I thought extension English and really the histories in general were done quite well, because I did ancient, modern, and extension. And then, but I thought the English, I just think that was really, they're missing, I personally think it's totally missing the point. I think the focus on just the essay questions are really unimportant, but they just don't ask you to speak personally about your own experiences. They don't ask you to speak from your heart. They don't ask you to write in a way that's clear and concise and where you're actually articulating an argument or a point. You don't. You just simply regurgitate what a teacher says to you, and then you repackage a question into your sample ideas that you've been taught up to now, and it's like not like you don't come out of it with a really complex, or not even complex, I don't even want to go there, just you don't come out with a meaningful understanding of any of the texts. It, you know, it'll always be like, oh, how did an Elizabethan audience interpret this differently, but you wouldn't actually engage with actually how an Elizabethan audience would have experienced it differently. It's just simply, you know, you've learned these like words you can just tick off. They're just words, and it was so, the concepts were so vaguely just kind of floating in the sky, but you were using them in their like most textual form, which is grabbing it and then putting it in. It didn't mean anything to you when you were putting it in. Therefore, the way you constructed sentences was just, were just hoping that it would make sense because it looked like it would make sense. And you'd be taught all these words that, looking back, are just so meaningless, like textual integrity and stuff like that. And you were told this was important, but it's like, no, you just combined two fancy words together. That's not important. And, you know, we don't call it the end or the conclusion. We call it the denouement and stuff like that. And it's like, why would you waste your class's time trying to force them to call the end or the conclusion the denouement when nobody calls it that in writing today? Like, you don't, within a professional context. I actually don't think I've come across it since high school.
It's interesting, because what I understand is really what life asks us to do more and more is to be authentic, to be in integrity. And this is almost the opposite of what we are taught at school. If you say there's not your personality or your heart in it, it's just giving back what you're taught. It's almost missing that authentic link, which in life is getting more and more talked about and important.
I think so. I think part of it. I remember I was listening to a teacher the other week talk about, and it was with a bunch of, you know, people older than 50 talking about, like, pretty much the classic thing of, oh, they give out participation awards now, children are too coddled, oh, I'm not even allowed to, and the teacher was complaining about not being able to use red pen and having to, you know, not use crosses and stuff like that, and saying that they're not being prepared for the real world, and therefore we're just coddling them. But I thought, funnily enough, that, like, actually the real world doesn't delineate in those terms and doesn't give you a mark when you, if I hand in a report or I give a script that's no good or whatever, no one's giving you a mark.
There are no red crosses.
Like, it doesn't really work that way. I mean, maybe the crosses, I don't know. But, like, the idea that marking is the most natural way to prepare young people for the real world doesn't actually make sense when analyzed properly.
But how would you do it differently? I mean, in a way, this red cross is like you don't get the money to finance your play. Isn't that the same?
But the difference is, like, for example, the Red Cross isn't saying, it's saying this, like, they're talking about using red ink and how that's a bit alerting and whatever. And my point is that, like, the idea that we need to be harsher to kids and that will prepare them for the real world isn't reflective of the fact that the real world is very murky and unclear and full of unclear outcomes. And you can't even clearly delineate between whether you're doing good work or bad work, whether you're actually, people are liking your stuff or people aren't liking your stuff. You can't tell whether a lot of things, like, you often aren't given the kind of like harsh, honest feedback you might want. And you are often, but the point is, even if you do, you're only getting from one sector. Like the idea that like one teacher is the judgment of the truth of what you have is actually misleading to what you create. And like, you know, when you have a major work, whatever it is, it's a lot more complex than what one teacher thinks of it. And by constantly focusing on this idea that a teacher needs to give a finalized perspective of it is actually just reducing the creative output you might have as a student, because they're forced and they are, you know, kind of instructed to think of it in those terms. And that's actually not reflective of the real world in most cases. And so I think the irony is you're told that a lot, but then you enter the real world and you realize actually your personal feelings about what something is a lot more important than what other people think, or like at least what one person thinks.
To not erode the confidence to the point that people aren't even game enough to present something or to create something and put it forward.
Well, and the presenting is a great way to place an emphasis, like, because when you're asked to, it's an example I can think of is in drama, but like in many cases, if you're asked to present it in front of people, then you will become the judge of your own work. You don't need a teacher to judge it for you to judge it. And the only person, the only thing that really matters is what you think of it.
So
if you feel confident enough to show your class whatever you're working on, then that will in of itself be its own way of regulating the standard of your work.
Marcus, when people look for you or want to have work or work with you or have a cartoon made with you, they don't find you under Marcus but under Keanu Hoy. Because your real name being Marcus, you've always decided to use a second name, Keanu Hoy, which is interesting. Can you tell us?
Well, everyone else, I don't know why you say Marcus.
Yeah,
but you never call me Marcus.
Because Keanu is not the name that's in your passport. I mean, that's what I used it for. But Keanu Hoy is also on your cartoons, because you've done a few music video cartoons.
I've always gone by Keanu Hoy.
So do people find your work under Keanu Hoy if they would like to find something?
Yes, KeanuHoy.com.
Oh, fantastic.
KeanuHoy.com.
Fantastic. Good spelling. Thank you so much. That was really, really insightful.
Okay,
it was
thank
so
you.
Lovely talking to you.
Yes. Thanks for
Bye,
being
Keanu.
Along. Bye.
Did you know that 43.7% of Australians between the ages of 15 and 74 are functionally illiterate, according to a recent OECD survey? Yes, most of them can read, but basic literacy is not enough to effectively participate in today's life. If you have to read a text several times to fully understand, you may be dyslexic. That doesn't mean you should work harder or study longer. Quite the opposite. I've created a brand new audio program entitled Focus and Read. This course will give you all the tools to focus, read and comprehend. And the program is absolutely free. It's my gift to say thank you for subscribing to the 1 Year School podcast and joining our community that helps our bright visual students to acquire the skills necessary to step into the vision of the future that they desire. So register right now simply by visiting theoneyearschool.com. So www.theoneyearschool.com and click on Focus and Read. Unlike school, the 1 Year School helps you to use your own creativity to learn differently, to read without repeating, to write with confidence and upgrade literacy and numeracy.